What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation, where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission? At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ce qui se passe dans les bois est un véritable podcast sur la criminalité. Nous discutons d'événements qui sont souvent de nature violente. La discrétion de l'auditeur est conseillée.
What Happens in the Woods is a true crime podcast. We discuss events that are often violent in nature. Listener's discretion is advised.
Well, hello, and welcome back to What Happens in the Woods. Thanks for joining us again for our third episode this season. Hi, Bryce.
Hello.
I don't know why you always seem surprised.
I'm surprised by everything.
Yeah. All right. Well, we just quick reminder, are really excited to do our 100th episode on September 1st, which is a Friday. We're going to do a live what the fuck, give the people what they want.
A WTF.
WTF.
She's not saying what the fuck.
I mean, I am saying what the fuck. Because it is a what the fuck. It's a what the fuck episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your favorite episode. Your favorite kind of episode. What?
No.
Nah. I think
they're all my favorites.
Are they? Yeah. All the what the fuck episodes are your favorites. No, you guys can't see his face.
They're all my favorites.
Well, we are excited to have you guys join us for that. So September 1st, which is a Friday, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for any of our friends on the East Coast or any other places. And I think, have decided it's going to be Instagram or YouTube. Would you decide both?
Yeah.
Oh, we're getting real, real ambitious here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So Instagram, YouTube, please make plans to join us. We have a lot to just fill that time with wonderful WTF stories.
Yeah. It's going to be about an hour.
Yeah.
About an hour. We could go over.
It could. Yeah. But we'll also answer any questions. If you guys want to interact with us, we would love it. The more, the merrier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So September 1st, we're excited. All right. Any other updates I'm missing?
Pee Wee Herman died.
I know. That's kind of sad. I feel like my childhood has died.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't always a big fan of Pee Wee Herman, but you know, for those who don't remember, there was only so much you could watch on TV. There were only so many channels. There was only, you know, Saturday mornings you woke up, there was only so many options. And sometimes I would just put him on because there wasn't anything else on that I wanted to watch. Not that I really wanted to watch him. But, you know, it's an iconic. I don't know. I don't know any other. It was iconic. It's
one of
part
of
my childhood. It was unique.
I don't know that you could make another show like that. Like Blue's Clues came close
because
you got a talking chair, talking mailbox. I mean, it literally is Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah.
And he has characters that come over like Salt.
I mean, it was kind
and
of
Pepper.
It was kind of, I always thought Pee-wee's Playhouse was like Mr. Rogers on crack.
It's very eccentric, but that's what made it awesome.
I guess.
For our generation. That was just like right there for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't my favorite, I guess. But it was something. And it definitely was part of like my Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, if there were reruns of it, I'd still watch it. It just, it was definitely not something that, like you said, can't be replaced. It can't be duplicated.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Is it came at a time too, where I had to explain to like Olivia and Haley, to the girls, basically like when we were kids, just like all the things that we, that are normal to us now growing up, like having to plan your potty breaks around commercials and getting snacks.
Right.
Like, you know, Haley was just like, why don't you just pause the TV? Because we didn't have pause.
No, we didn't.
Literally had no pause. Like, you know, you had to look in the TV guide. That's another thing. Just, you know.
Yeah, you could get the commercial breaks at TV Guide.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a different way of life.
Different way. Yeah. And then, you know, having to go to Blockbuster.
Yeah, and rent something.
And rent a movie.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't just Netflix it, or you couldn't just, you know, all these streaming services.
No, I remember when pay-per-view became a thing, because that's how we rented Dirty Dancing when it came out.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal.
Yeah.
To have that, because it just showed up on your bill the next month. So people would order like 4 or 5 movies.
Yeah.
And then have, and they could range in like cost.
Mm-hmm.
And it would show up on your bill the next month. You could easily rack up like $100 in extra fees just renting movies. And you only got to see it the one time.
Yeah.
You didn't get to keep watching and like rewind it, or if you watched it, you watched it. If you didn't, you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Things are definitely different.
The world's changing.
Yeah. I feel, I lately I've not felt like I'm feeling more and more my age.
No.
Which is not old. I don't want to say it's old, but I feel my age.
No.
There are reminders everywhere that I am definitely my age.
No, I was just like comparing that with the girls.
Yeah.
Like how everything was different.
Yeah.
Internet, telephone.
Yeah.
Home phone. Like, I don't even know anyone who has a home phone anymore. I mean, like the older generation,
not a landline.
Maybe the boomers, but.
Even a lot of them don't nowadays, because who even offers it? You know, AT&T. To have an actual landline.
Because mom still had a landline.
Yeah, she never used it, though.
No. But it was just that thing she held on to.
Yeah.
Like, mom, just get rid of it.
Yeah. I do understand there is a purpose for those, though. I can understand why you would want one. Because you're, you know, I get it. Yeah. Or when, like, having, if you were lucky enough to have a phone line in your bedroom, not only just have your own like phone number, but just a line, like be able to plug in a phone and be able to call out from your bedroom, not have to go out into the front room or the dining area where everybody could hear your phone calls.
That's the weirdest thing too, because like you couldn't, I could tell you a couple numbers, but like I remember my first phone number from like Travis Air Force Base. I remember, because I had my own phone number too in my bedroom.
Yeah, we never had that. I never had that anywhere, but I can remember my phone number from high school.
Yeah, I remember my phone number on Travis, and then our phone number. Yeah, Chris and I had our own phone line.
Yeah, I can't really remember, but I mean, I used to. You knew everybody's phone number. That's the only way you were going to get a hold of anybody.
If not, it was in the address book.
Yeah.
On the counter by the phone.
Flip thing, a little what do they call them?
Address book.
No, there was a little, there was
the
a
little
name
metal
for it.
One.
Yeah,
like the Rolodex.
Yeah, the little Rolodex. Mm. Yeah, that actually kind of ties into our case that I'm going to discuss.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Or is just me being nostalgic?
No.
We could go off on a whole tangent too.
We could. That's obviously a different podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go more into the live.
Maybe.
Also, if you don't, we're trying to go live on YouTube also because it's a little bit easier on the broadcast. Head over to the YouTube channel. We've had a YouTube channel since we started. Like, all of our podcasts are on YouTube. There's no video, but that's something we would like to do in the future, like video podcasts. If you could head over to What Happens in the Woods on YouTube and subscribe, that'd be awesome. Is I think we're at like 89. We need 100 subscribers just to get the live. Anyway.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, we need some help then if we're trying to go live there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And while we're at it, can I just put out there, nobody has left us a review in like months on Apple.
Yeah.
Get to going, people. I hate like begging for things, but it would be nice.
Yeah.
Just, you know, leave us some words of encouragement and make a case for why somebody would want to listen to us. Mm. Yeah. It'd be great. It would make my day. I'd appreciate it.
Especially, yeah.
On a personal level.
Yeah. Still sad Crime Diner's going away.
I know. I am going to miss listening to them weekly. I'm going to have to go back and listen to like the ones before. I didn't really binge everything mm-hmm. from the beginning when I found them. So yeah, Crime Diner has decided to close their doors.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to miss listening to those ladies and hearing about all the food.
Yeah.
But I do want you to know, I am still invited to go visit so I can go to a drag show.
Okay.
I made sure.
Awesome.
Yeah. So at some point I will make that trip.
Okay. Okay.
I'll go on the journey.
You have to get on a plane.
I understand that.
And get a real ID.
Okay. You know what? Don't call me out in front of people. That's my business. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mm. All right. Are you ready to get into this case?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's go. So our case this week is going to take us to the Washington-Idaho border in what is known as the Lewis-Clark Valley. And between 1979 and 1981, at least five victims went missing or were murdered that have ties to one particular individual.
I was just there.
Yeah. It is crazy.
That's crazy.
Eastern Washington has a lot of crime that I think doesn't get discussed very often because Seattle is so prominent in the state.
Yeah.
But honestly, the rabbit hole that kept leading me to other things when I was looking at these five victims was just continuous. So, I mean, as we know, Robert Lee Yates was in Spokane, which is right down the road from this. There was apparently several other, technically, I don't think named serial killers, but definitely along that line.
Yeah.
There was several that were actually named that I'll get to. So it's an overlooked area that has some crime because I think it's so isolated. It's very sparse and it's still not, I mean, to this day, I can only imagine in the late 70s, early 80s, how populated it wasn't. And driving through that area is very, very sparse.
Still today. Like, I literally did it the beginning of July, and there's so much just not there.
Yeah. I mean, when we drove through, like, Eastern Oregon, up through Idaho, and then back into Washington, when we had, like, a long family drive up to see my brother graduate. Gosh, I mean, what,
like
19 years ago?
Yeah.
So long ago. There were parts of Oregon where I was scared if we broke down, we would die.
Yeah.
It was that, like, there was no There was nothing. There was no gas stations even. There was no signs.
That
there
run was... between, was it once we left Reno and headed up, we were going to Steve's house in Nampa. Shout out to Steve Diaro. I know. No, he doesn't listen, but his daughter listens.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, that one was really scary.
It was, because if we had had any issues... Or if we had run out of gas.
Yeah.
And it was a real possibility because there is such a stretch of road that has nothing. It's just absolutely nothing. It's beautiful. It was dry, but, you know, it was, I think that's kind of what I imagined driving through like the Mojave Desert or parts of Arizona, things like that would be, where it's just, there's nothing there. And if you break down or... something happens, you're fucked. Like, who's coming for you?
Yeah.
Who's going to see you? Like, what do you do? And when we drove, there were no, like, did we even have cell phones? Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
But there was no service.
No, there was service.
I think your work phone was getting service.
Verizon had service there.
Yeah.
We were still... We were still on MapQuest. Like, I printed out all. I printed out the whole run.
Yeah.
Ah, there's another thing. Before Google Maps and driving directions, MapQuest.
That's why I didn't go anywhere, because I would have got lost. Well, yeah. It is definitely a very, you know, the area is just not populated. And it definitely wasn't back in the 70s. So in 1979, a 12-year-old girl disappeared without a trace, which is where our cases begin. Christina Lee White was last seen at a friend's house after going to the Assotin County Fair in Assotin, Washington. This was on April 28th, 1979. And the day began with Christina. She went with her mom and her younger sister in the morning to watch the parade that kicked off the fair. And then her mom dropped her off at her friend's house so that they could go to the fair together. The plan was that she would ride her bike home after the fair. So her mom dropped her and her bike off.
Okay.
At around 2:30 p.m., she called her mom from her friend's house stating that she was feeling ill from the heat. And she had had kind of a history of heat exhaustion just really affecting her.
Yeah.
So her mom advised her to, you know, lay down, drink some water, put a cool cloth on your neck and just kind of relax for a few minutes, get stable, and then ride her bike home when she was able to.
Okay.
And either her mom didn't have a car available to her at that time, or the younger sister was asleep taking a nap. It was kind of discussed, but left up in the air as to what, you know, what the issue was, why she couldn't just go over right then.
Was there a stepdad?
There was a stepdad. So I'm thinking, and you know, it was very common, especially in that time, for there just to be the one car. Yeah. Very, very rarely did everybody have their own car. So I'm thinking it was probably a combination of both things.
Okay.
Because the town is relatively small and her house was not that far away. So, I mean, if the sister had been awake, she maybe could have just walked over there.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been a few blocks. It wasn't like it's that far. So I think it was maybe just a combination of both, where, you know, it was very common at that time for kids to just go out on their bikes. She was 12 years old. From all accounts, she was very responsible. So her going to the fair with a friend, not that big of a deal. You know, her feeling the heat exhaustion, she had had that issue before. They knew how to deal with it. So it really wasn't anything that was, you know, very worrying for her mom to say, well, I need to rush over there immediately somehow. Yeah. It was just, you know, take a minute, cool off, do the best that you can, and then come home when you're able to. We don't know for certain that Christina followed her mom's advice, but it is assumed that she did, since she didn't come back home right away. At some point, her mom assumes that she went back to the fair because she was feeling better. The arrangement had been that she would ride her bike back home in the evening, and there's a report that a classmate had seen her in the area between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. riding home. That's a huge time gap.
Yeah.
And it's repeated across many articles, and you know, everything that I've seen, a couple things that I watched, that is the time gap that's given. I just feel like that's huge. They couldn't have narrowed that down anymore. Maybe she was just seen riding around the neighborhood. Maybe she was seen multiple times coming back and forth from the fair. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that could have happened. As of this recording, Christina White has never been found, and there's not been any trace of her remains or her bicycle.
Really?
Yeah. You can imagine this set the community, which, like we've mentioned, is very small, just spinning out of control. Local police and sheriffs and community members rallied to search for this little girl to no avail. There were not many leads. There were a lot of people that stood out as possible suspects, and many people were questioned, but there was nothing that came from it. Weeks after her disappearance, there seemed to be a break in the case when there were school papers that were confirmed to be Christina's were found on a farm outside of town. And this only caused more confusion as a thorough search of the area was done and there was no trace of her bike. There was no trace of her. There were no other leads there. Authorities really had no insight into what happened to her. And the papers are the only physical evidence to her disappearance.
So it wasn't like a bag. It was just the papers?
It was just the papers. Okay. And the person who found them, whose farm it was, said that they looked like they had not been there for very long. So, you know, that part of the state gets pretty hot. Yeah. So he would have started deteriorating papers. If it had been an unusual April and there was rainstorms, you know, there's all sorts of weather elements that could have started to, you know, make these papers either get, you know, soggy or bleached with the sun. Like, there's all these aspects of being out in the elements that these papers could have been ruined. He said they look like they were relatively good condition, mm-hmm. not been out there for very long when he found them.
Yeah.
So this was somewhere about 3 weeks after her disappearance.
Okay.
So it's very odd. And like I said, that is it as far as evidence. So Christina was the middle of three children, and she had an older brother and, like I mentioned, a younger sister. Her parents had divorced, and she had lived with her mom and her stepdad. Everyone that has talked about Christina describes her as full of laughter, fun-loving. She was good to get her hands dirty in the outdoors. She had a lot of activities to look forward to in the upcoming summer, some camping trips, church functions. No one thought that she would run away. There was just no reason to think that she was a runaway. The police chief at the time really thought that she was just having fun in town and that they were going to find her that night. There was nothing that led anybody to believe that there would be foul play or that she wouldn't be found. And then we fast forward to 1981 near Moscow, Idaho, where Kristen Noelle David, a 22-year-old senior at the University of Idaho, went missing. Christina was studying a double major in broadcast journalism and political science. She loved to take her bike for long bike rides and had set out the morning of June 26, 1981, to ride her bike along Highway 95 towards Lewiston, Idaho. She had called her mom the night before to talk about what her plans were and that she anticipated the ride would not be too hard. It was 32 miles, so it was going to take her a few hours, but she had a new job starting that day, so she was excited for that, and she had planned to be back home in time to be ready for that and make it to her new job. And there are several reports that a female matching Kristen David's description was on a bike riding on Highway 95 that day. Just outside of the town of Genesee, witnesses claimed that she was approached by a man driving a brown van. The man was described as approximately 30 years old, being stocky or husky. He was roughly 180 pounds and about 5'10" tall. This man had brown or reddish brown hair. He also had a beard. Witnesses described this van was in good condition and it had yellow license plates with dark lettering. The van had two swing out rear doors and then also had that sliding side door on the passenger side. Unfortunately, no one really saw what ended up happening to Kristen. And if this man who stopped his van to speak with her had anything to do with her disappearance, there's no evidence that leads to that. There is one key witness who was a man who was driving past and states he saw a female on the ground. Her bicycle was also on the ground as the man approached her from behind his brown van. So she was behind the van on the ground. The bike was on the ground. He didn't see what happened before to, you know, lead up to this point. And he doesn't stop. He keeps driving. He says when he got home, he called 911 to have emergency services respond in case the female was in trouble. But he himself did not stop. He thought that the man in the van was helping her. By the time that anybody responded, the female, the bike, and the man with his van were gone. Emergency services then contacted the witness, telling him that he had led them on a false lead. And this lead is actually problematic because it reportedly was given while the witness was under hypnosis. So it's really not a substantial lead at all.
That's weird.
Yeah. There are several people, though, that did see a female on a bicycle, riding her bicycle in that direction that day. Okay. And also there are witnesses that saw a man in a brown van who not only approached her, but maybe approached other people, other females along the road. So I can't say that this man didn't see what he saw, but hypnosis is, it's controversial.
Yeah.
So, and it would not be upheld if that testimony was ever needed in court.
Oh, really?
No. Hypnosis? Testimony or a statement given while under hypnosis? No.
Oh,
that's okay. Not, it won't hold up. On July 4th, 1981, along the Snake River, which divides Washington and Oregon and Idaho almost perfectly, a torso and a leg were found by people out on the river. They were out fishing. This was about 6 miles from the Red Wolf Bridge that kind of crosses over this river. The remains were wrapped in newspaper that had been dated from April of that year and also wrapped in garbage bags. It's stated that they were wrapped very well, as if somebody really took their time to do this.
When did they find it?
July 4th, 1981.
So about 3 months to wrap it real well.
Well, she disappeared June 26th, so no, about a week. The newspapers just happened to be from April. The remains that were found the next day, in total, there was 5 bags that were found. So the remains found the next day were found in a different area, so a little bit further down the river, but they were wrapped similarly with newspaper and the garbage bags.
So another set?
Another
set of remains.
Different parts of the body. So I don't, they never really, that's a lot of the issue that I had with this one was that while there's a lot of information, there's a lot that they've kept back because these are still unsolved. So a lot of causes of death are not given. I mean, obviously having somebody's remains be, you know, a body dismembered and wrapped up and, you know, obviously this is a homicide, but that doesn't mean that that's what killed her. It doesn't also mean that they have an answer as to what killed her because there are so many, they did not find the full body. But I am not sure. I know the torso was headless and they found just the torso and then the one leg. The first day, and then they found more. So that was 2 bags. They found 3 more bags the next day. There's really no information given as to what was in the remaining bags found the next day.
Okay.
Authorities used divers, boats, all resources that they could to try and locate the rest of the remains. Unfortunately, like I said, not everything was recovered. There were entities from multiple counties, the states of Washington and Idaho, and eventually the FBI is involved in this search and investigation.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's state lines there.
Yeah. FBI kind of comes in for everybody eventually.
Yeah.
Because there are some connecting the dots here that happens, and there's definitely a need for a forensic lab that can handle some of these things.
Okay.
It would be confirmed that the dismembered remains were those of Kristen David. Unfortunately, as with the 12-year-old who went missing in Asotin, Christina, she was found without her bicycle, her clothing. No other personal items were found. So that, like, the bicycle is mm-hmm. gone. That's a connecting factor. What is it about bicycles? I don't know. They never found anything for Christina, but there's no trace of that bicycle anywhere. You would think a white bicycle with, and it was like a 10-speed bicycle with a basket on the front. Somebody somewhere would have found that.
Yeah.
It's nowhere. Also with Kristen, her bicycle, her clothing, no jewelry, no, you know, personal, her purse, nothing. None of that stuff is found. Where would that have gone? Sadly, this case also remains unsolved.
Oh.
Yeah. And when we come back from this break, we'll take a look at the next victims.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This brings us to our last victims to discuss. So on September 12th, 1982, just a little over a year from Kristen. There's a lot of the same names here at play. So there's a Christina, a Kristen so far. We have stepsisters Christina Diane Nelson and Jacqueline Ann Miller disappear while walking from Nelson's apartment to a Safeway grocery store in downtown Lewiston, Idaho. So Christina was 21 and Jacqueline went by Brandy. So Brandy was 18. They were both from Boise, Idaho, having moved to go to school at Lewis Clark College. They had left a note at the apartment for Christina's boyfriend that they had decided to go walk to Safeway, get food, and that they would return soon. No one heard from them again. Christina's boyfriend reported the two missing the next day after he learned that Christina didn't show up for work or to her classes at the college. He didn't go by the apartment that night, so he didn't see the message until the next morning. He assumed it was from that day.
Oh, okay.
A search of her apartment showed no signs of a struggle. There was no sign of a crime scene whatsoever. At the apartment.
Okay.
Their purses and wallets were there. Contact lenses were there. Things that they would need if they were going someplace, yeah. They would have taken, as well as an uncashed paycheck was there.
Huh.
Nothing was out of the ordinary. Didn't look like they were planning to leave on a long trip. There were no leads. That same night, a 35-year-old man by the name of Stephen Purcell would also go missing. The three victims who went missing that night were all well acquainted. So at some point, they had all worked at or participated in plays at the Lewiston Civic Theater. Stephen was dropped off at the theater that night just after midnight, after going to a party with his girlfriend, so that he could do some laundry and practice his clarinet and also do his job as a janitor.
That's a busy night.
It is a busy night. So he had been working on sets. He then stopped, took some time out, stopped, went to a retirement party for somebody, mm-hmm. came back, and was going to do laundry because there was on-site laundry mm-hmm. for like costumes and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was going to play his clarinet. He always had his clarinet with him. Mm-hmm. And it was one of his, from all the descriptions that I could read, was like a prized possession.
Yeah.
And he was also, you know, working a little bit, kind of finish up some of the set production stuff. This was also a job that Christina Nelson had done previously. And as I mentioned, they all three were involved in like the productions, the plays that mm-hmm. the Civic Theater put on. They were actually getting ready for Pirates of Penzance to be the next performance. So mm-hmm. that's what the set productions were that they, okay. everybody was working on. So it was kind of a busy place to be getting ready for a production.
Yeah.
There were three people who cooperated that he was dropped off. One was his girlfriend who dropped him off. One was an actual patrolman who drove by and saw him entering the building. And I'll get to the third in a minute. So Stephen had also been involved as an artist and set design on those on the production. So that's how he got involved with the group. He actually was kind of roped in by another student who was, you know, searching for talent to help with set production and
recruiting.
Painting. Yeah. He and Christina also had gone to the same. So they both had taken classes at Lewis Clark State. I couldn't State College. I couldn't see if they had taken classes at the same time. There is quite an age difference. So I really am not sure. However, it seems likely since a student who was also kind of closer in age to Christina is the one that recruited him to the theater group.
Okay.
So it does seem likely that he was taking some college courses at this time. Like I mentioned, it was reported that Stephen was a really good artist. He liked to draw like cartoons, caricatures. He liked to make people laugh. So one of his favorite things to do would be like drawing somebody in a cartoon style and kind of presenting it to them and just in a funny way, kind of like how you'd pay people at the fair to do the caricatures, like drawing. He was also really a soft-hearted guy. He was described as just being very kind, very soft-hearted. He wanted to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And it really seemed like he had a type of relationship with Christina and Brandy where he was kind of a big brother type. He was always looking out for them and really trying to keep an eye out for them. Unfortunately, when the news of his disappearance was reported, it was initially suspected that he may have had something to do with the disappearance of Christina and Brandy.
Oh.
Everyone who knew him thought it just seemed very unlikely that that was what happened.
Yeah.
But when authorities were investigating his apartment, they didn't find anything that looked like a crime had taken place there either.
Mm-hmm.
They found his last paycheck uncashed. They found his car had been left at a friend's house because his girlfriend had dropped him off. And they assumed that because he was a man and he was missing and he knew the two women that he was involved in their disappearance.
Of course he was.
Yeah. So Christina's apartment was located kind of near the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of an assumption that the girls walked past the theater at some point that night and had seen Stephen, maybe, you know, chatted with him for a little bit. And maybe that's when something happened to them, whether it was involving Stephen or not. Because at some point, they recognized that Stephen's probably a victim as well.
Yeah.
There was nothing inside the theater or around it that suggested there was a struggle, that there had been any sort of crime or any reason to suspect that there was foul play.
Okay.
And that is why I believe that they also looked at him, because the woman obviously knew who, you know, abducted them obviously would have had some knowledge. If there's no sign of a struggle anywhere in any of these places,
yeah,
there's no witnesses that see anything other than Stephen enter the building. There's nothing that they can find inside the building that shows a struggle. So it kind of leads you to believe that it would have to be somebody that they know, that they trust.
Yeah, that there was no struggle. They were right. willing to go.
Right. The only thing that they did find that was odd, but again, does not really give much clear evidence, mm-hmm. is that Stephen's clarinet was found on near the stage where the orchestra pit would have been. There was yeah. a cover on it. His clarinet was found there.
Okay.
Anybody who knew him said he would not have left that clarinet. Yeah. It was definitely something he took with him many places. He always had it. Uh-huh. And it really was a prized possession. Yeah. He would Sounds not like have it. Let it out of his sight. It wouldn't be until March 1984 that the remains of Christina and Brandy were found near Kendrick, Idaho, which is about 30 to 40 miles away from Lewiston.
Uh-huh.
They were found on the side of a ravine, happened to be found coincidentally. So somebody walking by lost their hat when the breeze blew it off their head.
Mm-hmm.
And in trailing after finding this hat, they found these decomposed bodies of these girls.
Jeez.
Yeah. It is a very remote, isolated area. There were no homes around. It's just hillside.
Where is it relative to Lewiston? The north, south, you know.
I believe it's, let me try to think. I believe it's like northeast of okay. Lewiston. The decomposition of the bodies, they were really, at this point, nearly bones. There really wasn't much else left.
Mm-hmm.
Most reports do not reveal cause of death for either woman, but I did read that it was thought Christina's cause of death was strangulation. Authorities did find clothing and personal items on the bodies, so they did find some jewelry. They did find, you know, this was not a case of robbery. Yeah. Nothing was really taken that would have been worth value if they had been killed for a robbery intent, you know. There was an uncashed paycheck. It would have been so easy for somebody to cash a paycheck. Their wallets were left at the apartment. They didn't have anything on them that was of value other than like personal effects to get them to the store and get them home that night. So any jewelry that could have been valuable that would have been taken, it was found on their bodies.
Yeah.
So motive is very unclear. They also found a clothesline type cord that it is suspected was used to bind them. And it wasn't, like I said, immediately clear, but both deaths are ruled as homicides.
Okay.
Nothing was found at that site that gave any clues as to where Stephen Purcell was. So he was still considered a possible person of interest.
Uh-huh.
Later on, authorities concede that Stephen may have witnessed something, perhaps Christina and Brandy's attacks, and was victim to the same suspect, yeah. the same person who did that. So over the past 40 years, these crimes have remained a mystery. There is one person who stood out as a prime suspect, and up until recently, they were not named. I watched a Discovery Channel documentary called Cold Valley. This was from 2018, in which they go the entire documentary without naming the suspect. But they are all very clearly talking about one particular person.
Okay.
I read several articles which also do not name the suspect or the person of interest, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
However, everybody in this small community, in the communities where these crimes happened,
yeah.
they all know who this person is. And they want to name him. They want to name this person out loud, to have the media name this person. They want his name released. But for the most part, I'm not sure if the authorities don't want to do that or if it's just because he is only a person of interest, even mm-hmm. if he is the main person of interest. Nobody really wants to disclose his name. There is a documentary that disclosed it in 2011, mm-hmm. which I find interesting that, and I was not able to watch that documentary. I could not find it up until like yesterday, so I didn't have time to watch it.
Okay.
And it is, you have to pay for it on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
It does name him in 2011. It does name this person of interest.
Okay.
And I debated whether I wanted to name him, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to. You can find this person's name. It's not hard to find at this point. If you look up the Lewis Clark Valley murders,
mm-hmm.
at some point you're going to find this person's name. I just hesitated because I'm not sure why the 2018 documentary doesn't name him. It's very, very, relatively newer documentary.
Yeah.
It kind of confused me why the older one would name him as a person of interest and the newer one would not.
I don't know.
Yeah. I do know in that documentary in the Cold Valley, there's only two episodes. They are about over an hour each, though. With the recent DNA possibilities, have sent off like the newspaper that was wrapped around Kristen.
Mm-hmm.
And found they did send that off for analysis. It's damn near deteriorated at this point. It unfortunately was just kept in evidence bags and boxes and put in between glass plates.
Yeah.
Which didn't really do anything to keep it as safe as it could have been. But
to be airtight,
they did what they need. You know, they did what they could.
Yeah.
Really. Because who knows? I mean, it's really lucky that they even caught it, because that they even saved that it's even around.
Yeah.
But that's been sent off. I believe there's also a rope, like the cord, has mm-hmm. been sent off for a DNA analysis. So there might be, because that's still not back. I don't see where that has been. There's been anything released on if that has produced anything that they can go off. Maybe that's why they haven't released this person's name again. I'm just not sure.
Okay.
So this person is investigated.
Okay.
It turns out that while investigating the Civic Theater murders and Stephen Purcell's disappearance, this man comes forward. He's interviewed by the police, and he ended up claiming to be at the Civic Theater on the night that Christina, Brandy, and Steven disappeared.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He puts himself there. He claims to have gone to the theater to do work on stage designs. He was there earlier in the evening with Steven.
Mm-hmm.
They parted ways because Steven went to the retirement party. This person claims he went to go eat at a local pizza restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So the theater is right across the street from where the restaurant that he ate was, which is right across the street from the Safeway where the women would have walked to go get food.
Yeah.
So they walked right by the theater and the restaurant where this gentleman was at. So he eats. He claims that he goes back to the theater. He's working again and he injures his back. So he decides to lay down on the couch in the green room. And during their questioning, he tells police that he slept from about 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. He says he did not hear anybody enter the building that night, which we know Stephen Purcell was dropped off around 12:05 a.m. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably would have heard that. He claims at some point to have heard the phone ring, but he was too tired. He just didn't get up and answer it.
Okay.
He also claims that he did not hear, like, if Stephen entered, he didn't hear any clarinet. He would have been, the green room would have been right by the door where Stephen was known to have entered.
Yeah.
So it's very unlikely you would have heard nothing. There's no confirmation that Christina or Brandy actually went to the theater and entered the theater, but we know Stephen did. It is confirmed. And he confirms that he was there. That timeline also can be debunked. So in the documentary that I watched from 2018, the sheriff who is now sheriff in Asotin
mm-hmm.
is looking at all of these cases. And while she's kind of talking to the FBI agent who comes and picks up all of her multiple folders of information, they go over this gentleman's timeline, and he claims that he watched a movie that was being played that night on TV at the pizza restaurant. He claims that he left when it ended at about 10 p.m. But okay. He also is claiming that he got back to work at the theater for a little bit and slept at 10 p.m. The movie actually didn't end until 11 p.m.
Mm.
So there's definitely some conflicts there.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned, on the same block, the Safeway grocery store that Christina and Brandy were supposed to walk to that night, they would have passed by him. He claims that he never saw the ladies, never saw Stephen whatsoever. But he does acknowledge that he was at the theater and he was at the restaurant where he potentially could have seen
both
the women. He definitely would have seen Stephen.
Yeah.
So his ties to Christina White and Kristen David, that's a huge question right now, right? Mm-hmm. If we're looking at this person of interest. So in a weird twist, very coincidental or not, this person of interest can be placed at the home that Christina White's friend lived at, because it turns out he was dating her friend's mom.
Oh, wow.
And he was there by old police record. He was there the day that she disappeared. He should have been at work, but he was not. So there are no first person accounts that put him there, but mm-hmm. in an old police record of timeline of events, it is stated that he was around the home that day. He also is reported to have volunteered his help in the search for Christina White that night, which we know is sometimes a dead sign, a dead giveaway of people who are over-involving themselves, because either they want to misdirect and they don't want people to find something, or
it's the thrill.
It's the thrill of people searching for something that you have done, this crime that you've committed.
Yep.
It's very likely that that could be the case here.
Oh, yeah.
It's very coincidental. It's way too coincidental that there is a tie to Christina White.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in 1979, and we're now looking at a crime that happened in 1982. Kristen David was also part of the theater group at some point. Maybe not at this time, maybe not for this production, but she at some point had helped with costume design.
Oh.
It's very likely that he knew her, even though he claims to not. So there are too many coincidences.
Yeah.
There is, like I said, that documentary in 2011 that I wasn't able to watch. Like I said, there are plenty of articles. There's other things that you can pull up and it'll reveal this person's name. There is also some history that this person has criminally. So in the 60s, he was found at a mortuary trying to break in the middle of the night, found with a knife, a camera, and a flashlight, trying to take the screen off of a window in the mortuary. The only person who would have been in the mortuary that night was a 17-year-old girl who had died mysteriously. Mm-hmm. She had been with her brother, her brother's girlfriend, and her boyfriend at Santa Cruz Boardwalk the day of her death.
Mm-hmm.
Her and her boyfriend separated from her brother and his girlfriend, and they were having a heated discussion. It wasn't necessarily an argument, but they kind of took a pause. And it is said the boyfriend walked off and met up with the brother and the girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then as, you know, it came around, the, you know, beach patrol was saying, hey, we're shutting down the beach. Everybody needs to go home.
Mm-hmm.
She hadn't found them. So they went to look for her and they ended up finding her body nude, completely nude in the water. So of course, the boyfriend, the brother, the girl, brother's girlfriend, they're all, you know, questioned, investigated. Nobody can really say that there's any foul play. I'm not sure what her cause of death was, but this is the only person that would have been on display for a funeral, would have been this girl in this funeral home that this person of interest was caught breaking into. So the father who ran the funeral home woke up, caught him trying to get into the funeral home, mm-hmm. called police. He was arrested. His story is that he was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. And then he was crossing the parking lot. I don't know why you would need to take the screen off of a window with a knife and have a camera on you and a flashlight if you're just crossing the parking lot. But the charges got, because, you know, really nothing was provable. What are you going to do with that information? Breaking and entering is not anything related to a dead body, you know, at that point where they found him. So it got knocked down to like a misdemeanor.
No, but it is a stepping stone.
It's a stepping stone. There's also a possibility, and it is a far reach again. There is apparently this person of interest grew up in Chicago and right in the same neighborhood that he lived in as a young teenager before he went, he had some military service. There was an 8-year-old girl who was murdered that had been on her way home from, you know, kind of a day session at the YMCA. So she was kind of a latchkey kid and unfortunately was found brutally murdered in an alleyway. Ugh. Not that he has been connected to that, but it you know, people doing research on this gentleman and his previous history mm-hmm. obviously are looking into any connection that they can make to crimes that he may have committed. And like I said, he is not necessarily a person of interest for that crime specifically, mm-hmm. but it's brought up, obviously, because there's, you never know.
No.
You never know. It seems like, you know, there are a lot of coincidences with this person of interest, mm-hmm. and there could be other things. I mean, really, the problem with this that I see is that family members, members of the community are hyper-focused on this person of interest. Enough so that these could just be coincidences. You know, nothing is proven, and it is possible that there are just coincidences, but a lot of people want to name him as the person responsible.
As suspect number one.
Right. And I don't know that there's enough evidence to do that. Everything is very coincidental, circumstantial. There is nothing that would be proven in a court if charges were ever made against him. If anybody would even be willing to prosecute this with what they have, you know, really, they can place him at a potential crime scene. There's no evidence of a crime scene. That building, the Civic Theater, actually was condemned. So it is possible that any evidence that was there is gone.
Oh, yeah.
There was the newspaper, you know, that was wrapped around Kristen's body. Mm-hmm. That is potentially could have some DNA to it. The cords that were found that they believe were used to bind Christina and Brandy were a match for the same type of cord that could have been found at the theater. So there is a link there. But again, without DNA evidence, without being able to pull cord from the theater and match it with the cord that was found at the scene where the bodies were found, there's nothing that they can really link to a person.
Yeah.
So it seems like people really want to pinpoint this person. Mm-hmm. And that's why I hesitated to name him, because I just don't know that there's enough evidence. There seems to be. They're in the right direction to maybe find some connections that are more substantial. But even 40 years later, they don't have it. It's really unfortunate.
I'm wondering if he's sweating because DNA is advancing so much.
Whoever did this, I'm sure, is sweating, because if they can extract any DNA from anything that they have, it's going to be damning. I mean, it is what it is. We know that, you know, nobody is immune to this technology.
No, but if any of your cousins have done, you know, Ancestry or 23andMe, you're kind of fucked now.
You are kind of fucked. Yeah. Even if you did something in your 20s and went on to lead a normal, productive life and you know, it was a one-off and you made a really bad fucking decision mm-hmm. and you didn't get caught for whatever reason, you just yeah. went on to lead your life, you're fucked.
Yeah.
If they have DNA that they can link you to, you hope you enjoyed that because you're going to rot in prison the rest of your life, right. probably. You know, it is definitely something that I'm hoping that, you know, the FBI has been able to really take what little they had to give and has been able to find something. And they're just waiting for very definitive proof that they can prosecute somebody, whether it's this person of interest or somebody else.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to pay for these crimes.
Yeah.
There's also huge kind of dissent when it comes to who the actual victims are of mm-hmm. this person of interest. Brandy and Christina and Stephen are definitely considered tied to him. He has that link to Christina White. Kristen David is a little bit different because, you know, while they don't have Christina White's remains and they don't have Stephen Parasol's remains,
yeah,
that is actually a link between them that they have never been found. They have the remains of Christina Nelson and Brandy Miller and Kristen David, and the MO doesn't fit because Kristen David was dismembered
mm-hmm.
and wrapped, meticulously wrapped.
Yeah.
And found, you know, in an isolated river area.
Yeah.
The remains for Christina and Brandy were just dumped on the side of a ravine.
Yeah.
They were not dismembered. They were not wrapped. They were left on the side of the ravine to do whatever.
Yeah.
They're, you know, it was an isolated area. So I'm sure the person thought, you know, these people are never going to get found.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't
those two crimes.
It's not the same.
Yeah, seem very different. But
yeah,
MOs change.
They can depending upon opportunity. And the discussion is that, you know, with Kristen David, the person, if it was the person in the brown van, they were able to pick her up, pick her bike up, put her in the back of the van, and take her to a location where they had the opportunity to, you know, kill her. But also take the time to dismember her and then yeah. take the time to meticulously wrap each body part.
Yeah.
They had the time, they had the means.
So isolated out there.
Yeah. And this person of interest has owned several properties along this area.
Oh, God.
Some of them have been isolated. He owned a house that was just a block away from where Christina White was at her friend's house. He didn't actually own the house where mm-hmm. they were at, but he owned a house just like a block and a half away that he could have easily taken her to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they weren't able to ever, he would not submit to a polygraph. He would not consent to any searches. He lawyered up pretty quick. So they were really not able to search for any evidence in a timely manner when it came to this person of interest. So connecting him is just at this point, I don't know how they can without DNA.
Connect. Yeah. It's too far along to connect them. No.
Yeah.
So much time has passed.
Yep. So over the years, there have been many names that were thrown around that the authorities have thought may be connected to these crimes. Robert Lee Yates was one of them.
Of course.
Because, of course, he was in Spokane. Harry Hantman, which I have never heard of him until this case. And Otis Toole, I've never heard of him either.
Mm-mm.
Otis Toole apparently named himself in this case. But he just didn't have details.
Yeah.
So he was seeking recognition for God knows what, but none of those people are as close as a person of interest as this other unnamed person. And yeah, over the last 40 years, he's stayed on the radar consistently. So it's very interesting to see where this leads. If the FBI are close, if the DNA is going to bring anything back. But unfortunately, there are no answers for any of these families.
No.
There's no resolution.
But my fingers are crossed for DNA.
I mean, I think that's the chance, because this gentleman's aged. If he's really, you know, this person of interest, he's aged. Anybody else that could have been involved in the crime has aged. You know, this is going back to the late 70s, early 80s. The clock's ticking on that to hold anybody accountable. So I do think with the the FBI released statements on the 40 year anniversary of some of these crimes, and there's been numerous, you know, articles that have come out in the last couple of years regarding this that have kind of brought it back up and tried to get more information out there, asking for any information, if anybody remembers seeing something, if they remember any stories. You know, in small towns, people see things.
Oh, yeah.
People are paying attention, and they notice patterns. They notice when things that are out of the ordinary. And, you know, being that it's a closed, small community, people may not want to come forward because it's somebody they know.
Yeah.
And they don't want to speak because they're afraid. And at this point, who knows who's passed on and is taking knowledge with them.
Yeah. No deathbed confessions.
Right. So it's very unfortunate that these families, you know, these parents lost children and they've since died, not knowing what happened to their loved ones, their siblings, their cousins, who are championing this case and trying to, you know, get answers for their loved ones. They're going every day with no answers.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate.
It's sad.
Yeah. So I do hope that they're close. DNA for the win.
Yay.
And that's our case this week. It's a doozy.
Huh.
Yeah. I am going to try to watch that other documentary now that I know where it is. Yeah, the one in 2011, because I'm curious to see their stance on it compared to the one in 2018, where they skirt around this person of interest so much.
They just give you the facts.
Yeah. And it's funny because the family members are like, you want me to name him? You want me to name his name? I'll name it. And literally one of the cousins goes on to, like, she goes to say it and they cut her off.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah. They bleep her.
They cut her off. They completely cut off the scene and they go to the next scene.
Maybe that's the selling point.
Maybe it was, but it definitely got me, I don't know, creeped me out, kind of, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. To have all these people talking about the same person, but nobody will name him. I was like, is he Voldemort? What the fuck's going on here?
I was just going to say that. You want me to name him?
Yeah.
Ruined it.
Sorry, I think too much like that. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for listening. We're curious to know your thoughts on this one. Definitely go and do some research. Watch these links that I have for the documentaries and episodes of, you know, known crime shows on Discovery Plus. As always, we want to thank you for listening and all of the support. We can't wait to see you guys for our 100th episode. And like we always say, stay out of the damn woods.
The woods.
It's no good. Bye, guys.